This is John Crist. Welcome to the Saturday Down South podcast. Our guest for this episode, Cole Kubelik from SEC Network. If you love offensive line play, then this is the conversation for you. We talked about Alabama making the change from Cam Robinson to Jonah Williams at left tackle. We also got really down in depth for the Arkansas offensive line as well as Georgia. Clearly going to be important for those two teams to make it big in 2017. Give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, Cole, let's start off right with what's in your wheelhouse and talk offensive line. I talked to one of your compatriots at SEC Network earlier in the year, and he talked about offensive line play being, quote unquote, borderline irrelevant these days because of the way that the college game has really morphed from an offensive standpoint. Just give me your state of the offensive line play in college football as a whole right now.
First of all, I'd like to know who that was that says offensive line plays irrelevant. There are ways, more ways to maneuver around having a great offensive line in today's college football than maybe there ever has been, and still be successful offensively. Now, is offensive line play irrelevant? No, because I always believe that this is a line of scrimmage game, and especially league. This year will be very different. I think when you look at the offensive lines in the SEC this fall, it's going to be very intriguing. Last year, going into the season, my take on sort of my 1,000-foot view of the league was, you had dominant edge defenders and front sevens on the majority of teams. You had inexperienced offensive lines and inexperienced slash poor quarterback play. Now, some of those guys grew out of that. New guys were inserted and that changed. But we saw quarterbacks get hurt, go out of games, and cost teams games. This year, I think it'll be different. We have more experienced offensive linemen returning. There's going to be much better quarterback play. And SEC front sevens were decimated across the board. So the intriguing part about this year's offensive line play with the SEC is that I don't think I've ever seen this many quality offensive linemen who have proven themselves in a league change positions going into a season. Mm-hmm. You got Braden Smith at Auburn, William Clapp at LSU. Braden's going from guard to tackle. William's going from center to guard. You got Zach Bailey at South Carolina going from guard to tackle. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Martinez Rankin might end up playing center.
Yeah, he played center in the spring, and I think he's probably third best left tackle in the league if he stays at left tackle. Martez Ivey at Florida is bumping out the tackle from guard. So how do those guys adapt? How do they adjust? They might be very talented at guard but don't get it at tackle, vice versa. So I think you look at a couple of teams in this league and how those groups gel before the season and learn to play together will probably decide – not only how good of a group they have, but how good of a football team they have.
It was Matt Stinchcomb, by the way, so keep my name out of it. But
I might have a word with Matt after this.
So is it almost like a cyclical type thing? Because I talked to Booger McFarland not too long ago, and we went over the list of defensive linemen in this league a year ago, and it was a long, long list of really good players, a lot of them in the NFL right now. So the list isn't quite as long of guys we expect to be great defensively in the trenches. And like I said, it seems to have flip-flopped, where the experience and the guys who've done it is now on the other side of the ball. And it clearly seems like you're expecting the results to be a little different this year as well.
I am. I think that when you look at the SEC this year, one of the things that will take place will be problem games for teams based on contrasts of style. Mm-hmm. So let's take Auburn, Missouri, Kentucky, Ole Miss. These are teams that are going to be able to score points. Mississippi State, with proven commodities at certain positions on offense, it would lead you to believe they're going to be able to score. South Carolina is going to be able to score. I don't think all those teams are going to play great defense. Some of them might not barely play any defense. But you get against teams like LSU, Georgia, Florida, all of a sudden you get in a track meet style game with those teams, or they get hot for two quarters, three quarters. Some of these teams aren't built to come back from that. They're not built to play that style of game. So I do think we'll see a little bit of a different style league this year, not dominated by front sevens, defensive linemen, edge defenders, edge rushers, just because we haven't seen those guys do it yet. It's the reason that I say Alabama's defense cannot be close to what it was a year ago, is because you lost the best pass rusher of the Saban era in Tim Williams. You lost the best overall defensive lineman that I've maybe ever watched play college football in Jonathan Allen. You lost one of the best edge players that Saban's had in Ryan Anderson. And I've had NFL scouts tell me that they had Reuben Foster graded higher than any linebacker that Nick Saban's had at Alabama. Those guys don't just walk in and do that again. And the other key to that is, I saw those guys do it 2, 3, and 4 years ago. And some of the names like Isaiah Buggs, Christian Miller, Terrell Hall, I haven't seen those guys do it in games yet. Mm-hmm. So until I see it, I can't just say they're going to go out and be dominant in the SEC.
I want to talk a little X's and O's. You'd love to do those things on social media. The run-pass option, the RPO, seems to really have changed schematically how offensive football is being played at the college level. And we know how it works from a quarterback's perspective, the backs, the receivers, the tight ends. We don't talk about how it affects the offensive line that much. You literally have guards and tackles that don't know if it's a run play or a pass play behind them. How do they make those adjustments when these things are happening at the line of scrimmage on the fly?
Oh, it's easy. They don't adjust. They run the play that's called. Mm-hmm. So if it's 28, which say is outside zone to the right, you're running 28. Now that quarterback has the option to pull it and throw it or make a check to his receiver and pull it and throw it. This has been going on for a while. It hasn't been as far down the field. When I played under Noel Mazzoni, when he was our offensive coordinator at Auburn, we had what we called a 90 check. And our quarterback sometimes would make a 90 check and he would turn and throw essentially a bubble screen, a ball in the flat to the slot receiver. And he would basically used it as a run play. It's running the ball through the air. Now, we still ran outside zone, which at that time, not thinking about it as an RPO, it takes us a little time to go wide in that wide zone scheme before we're ever going to get upfield because no one's directly going north and south. Mm-hmm. So RPOs have been around for a while. They just weren't called RPOs. Quick screens have been around for a long time. It's just now these quarterbacks have a true option of not communicating anything with their offensive line and just running a pass play. And you talked about going through some stuff on my Twitter and film. I've seen touchdown passes multiple. The first 5 weeks of last year's college football season, I saw a ball thrown into the end zone and caught with a lineman standing in the end zone. So it's how it's happening, and it's today's college football. I don't hate it. I do see certain parts of it and think, okay, this guy shouldn't be 7 yards down the field. He right. shouldn't be 9 yards down. This is a little absurd. There is a way to meet in the middle, but I think the RPO is the evolution of college football. Does it put a defender in the bind? You're damn right it does. And that's one thing that offenses have figured out that helps them be successful.
But isn't this one of the complaints of the NFL, general managers and coaches, that when they get these offensive linemen to the next level, they're not the finished product they would like to be, particularly going off the ball and just moving the guy that's in front of
them? Yeah, I don't think the RPO is so much a part of that. I think it's more when you see zone options, zone read options, zone read plays. You see a lot of the counter games and the power games, basically blocking back and pulling, pin and pulling. A lot of offenses are just making a living off that. So you'll have a tackle that blocks down with his guard and then scrapes up to the linebacker, and you're just running, you're not blocking the defensive end that he's leaving, and you're running a zone read off that guy. Well, in the NFL, it's going to be more of a man-to-man block. That tackle is going to have to block up the defensive end, and he's either going to have to reach him or cut him off if he's backside. So I think that's more of a part of why it's not really carrying over. Also, a big part of it is slide protection, quick protection, because you're basically taking one step to the right, one step to the left, and you're protecting your gap. That's all you're responsible for. And then the NFL, defenses are just too quick. If they see you doing that, they're going to come up with a way to get to your quarterback in a hurry, and coverages are too good to where you can't make a living off those kind of quick throws. They'll adjust and they'll take those away. So the pass protection and the man blocking schemes are something that are going away from college football. But that goes back to your original point that Matt said, and there's a lot of truth in what Stinchcomb said in that, because he and I have talked about it and talked about different offenses and how we'd kind of love to play in those offenses because they're not difficult blocks. Mm-hmm. The level of difficulty of what you're asked to do is not extreme like it was maybe before I played when everything was just isolation. I mean, it's man on man. You either block that guy or you don't block that guy. Then double teams came in, then zone came in. Isolations, counters, a lot of different things, toss sweeps. It all has changed and morphed, but there are a lot of things that happen in the run game now where the level of difficulty is not very high, but then when you jump to that next level, it's going to be, and you're just not prepared.
So I was an NFL guy for a lot of years before I covered college football, and I would say even 10 years ago in the NFL, you know, left tackle had a specific skill set, right tackle had a different skill set. Now I went to the combine this past February, and I got a lot of people telling me that like left and right tackle, there isn't as much of a difference anymore. The traits are somewhat similar. Is that just a product of the game that's being played? There's more pass rushers out there. It just seems like the positions, maybe these guys making these moves from guard to tackle and outside and inside, the positions don't have as much variance between right. them as they used to.
Well, I think from tackle to tackle, no. From guard to tackle, a little bit. You know, from center to tackle, it depends on where you're going. I think it's always easier to go tackle in. It's more difficult to go guard out. Now, guard, center to guard is not that difficult. Center to tackle is very difficult. Tackle to center, very difficult. Tackle to guard, not as difficult. Tackle is physically the most difficult position to play. And it's not just because of what you need to be capable of doing. It's what the guys that you're doing it against are usually capable of doing, and you're going to be doing it by yourself more often. That's what makes tackle the most difficult position to play of the offensive line. Now, center brings in a completely different mental aspect of the game, and obviously you're going to have to do some different things from that perspective, but I don't think the skill level has changed a whole lot. Different guys are asked to do different things. For me, going back and talking about some of these guys changing positions, it used to be if you could play every – you remember Barrett Jones at Alabama. Sure. He started every position. Just before Barrett played, it used to be if you can play every position, that's extremely valuable. But then I think now we're getting away from guys having any sort of specialization at any position, and it's almost taking away from their value a little bit. Like, I think Braden Smith's a perfect example at Auburn. I would have had Braden Smith the number one guard in the SEC going into this season. I would have probably had Zach Bailey number two, maybe Deshaun Robertson three. Robertson's going to center. Bailey's also going to tackle. So I don't even know who the number one guard in the league is going to center. They're all moving around. William Clapp would be up there. He's going to center.
Right.
Braden Smith is not going to be a top three round pick at tackle. He's just not. Is it more valuable to show that you can also be an average tackle and maybe be an emergency tackle? Or is it more valuable to come back, play guard for a year, hone your skills, be dominant, and maybe be better than where you weren't as good last year and be a late second, late first, late second, mid second round pick at guard? So I think this versatility along offensive linemen has maybe gotten a little bit carried away. Mm-hmm. Some of these teams are doing it for the betterment of their teams, and I get that. But I do think some kids are being sold a bill of goods of, we're going to let you try to play here because that's the money position in the NFL. And it's just not a real thing.
Yeah, you're sort of leading me to my next question. Braden Smith's a good example. Martez Ivey's a good example. These guys are all SEC guards. That is a known commodity. You know what you have. But now you're moving them out to tackle. I understand that tackle is a more glamorous position. It's a more valuable position. But if you know what you have at that left guard or right guard, why take the risk of kicking a guy out, moving in another guard? You potentially have two question marks instead of one.
No, you're preaching to the choir. I don't... You take someone who you know that's handled, that's dominant, and that's maybe going to even get better than it is now. So we have zero concern with that
position. And can maybe help an edge guy who doesn't have as much experience.
Absolutely. And I think Martez Ivey is an interesting case because I do believe that his body type, his figure, is a tackle. I mean, if God's creating an offensive tackle, Martez Ivey is going to be a lot closer than Zach Bailey or Braden Smith as far as what he's creating. He's got the wingspan. He's got the length. His feet are, the way he moves is a little bit more natural for what a tackle is going to be asked to do. Now, I don't think it's a shoo-in that he's going to be successful at tackle because he whiffed a lot at guard last year. And there was times when he was by himself that didn't look great at guard. So that's a very concerning move to me because you look at David Sharp at left tackle last year. Martez Ivey obviously played guard because of him. Now he's going to bump out. I think they have the most talented offensive line in the league. Mm-hmm. I love TJ McCoy at center. I love their right tackle, Juwan Taylor. But are they going to be able to figure it out as far as making a couple of moves and those five guys playing together?
One guy I want to talk about from a year ago, it was Cam Robinson. You know, he's going to get a chance to play left tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, I believe a second round pick. He wins the Outland Trophy. I talked to a handful of people who know the offensive line, Matt Stinchcomb being one of them, saying he was the second best tackle on his own team last year.
Sure.
And that he wins that Outland Trophy on reputation alone. Is it possible Alabama is actually upgrading with Jonah Williams going from right to left side, replacing an Outland Trophy winner, but being better somehow at that spot?
Yeah, some of these college awards are no different than watch lists. I mean, it's just who you've heard of. Mm-hmm. You know, a watch list is, oh, did he play in games last year? Yes, we're going to put him on a list to watch. Sorry. Listen, I watch all the games, so every kid should be on my watch list because I like to watch them all. So I do agree with that reputation had a lot to do with that. In my opinion, if I was voting, and it's my criteria as the best blocker, there's no way Cam Robinson wins that award last year. Now, did he have a couple good games? Yeah, he put the LSU game on last year, totally different guy, completely different dude.
When he was motivated, he was fantastic.
Absolutely.
But if he wasn't motivated, he tended to fall asleep.
And Jonah Williams is more technically sound, more fundamentally sound, which is scary to say that a true freshman can come in and do that. But Cam Robinson as a freshman was more fundamentally sound than he was last year. Mm-hmm. So it could be an upgrade. Going from right to left is still different. It's just different. But Jonah repped it last year. He repped it in practice. He repped it through the spring. I think he'll be fine there. Could he be an upgrade? Absolutely, because I love the way the kid plays the game.
Now, how much is that a product of guys like me, a lot of the credential crowd here? We didn't play the offensive line.
And again, you have no business voting on anything offensive line.
I don't.
Sorry. I'm not trying to be rude.
I don't disagree with that. I was a wide receiver once upon a time. I can figure those things out. But the finer points of what you understand, I'm never going to understand that. And I think I studied the game pretty well compared to some people that are here. But again, reputation carries it all, and all of a sudden Cam Robinson wins the Outland Trophy.
Listen, I've got a group of offensive line friends that I'm on either group text or group messages with, instant messages, that we talk about certain offensive line things, and I have questions about things that I see sometimes. Mm-hmm. So there's no way that a guy who's never studied it, never learned it, never looked at it knows. And trust me, I am not, oh, you didn't put your hand in the dirt, so you don't know, guy. That's not it. But when it comes to offensive line play, it's a very unique position. There is no statistic. That's one thing about the Outland Trophy. I had the guy on my radio show, the Schneider scale that they came up with about if you on third and shorts, how many first downs you got, or how many rushing first downs you had. Cam Robinson could be getting credit for a bunch of runs off right tackle.
Right.
We don't know how many rushing touchdowns have you had.
Right.
What if they were all 80-yard toss sweeps to the right? I mean, we don't know.
We tried this with Orlando Pace back in the 90s.
There's no statistic. There's no way to mathematically measure it. And I think that frustrates traditional football media because they can go to a receiver and say, how many catches, how many yards per catch, how many touchdowns. And now we have advanced statistics of targets, catches per target, yards per target. We can break it all these different ways. There are times I can watch a certain offensive line and not be 100% sure what his assignment was, or if one or two guys missed an assignment or missed a call that was or should have been made. Therefore, how do you grade that individual? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like safety. Like, I never went into a safety room, but you're telling me you're giving me halftime grades of a safety in a game? There's no position on the field that has more variables that can change within or before a play than a safety. Run fits, blitzes, disguising coverages, zone coverage, man coverage. There's no way to tell.
Right.
And offensive line goes even a step further with that because we just don't know what the call was, and we don't know what the play is,
but
or what
the safety doesn't give up a 40-yard completion, all of a sudden he had a great first half.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's move on to a couple of teams in particular that I think about offensive line when I'm looking for the 2017 season. In the West, the first one that comes to mind is Arkansas for me, because Austin Allen took a ton of punishment last year. I'm sure some of it was his own fault for not getting rid of the ball. But we're talking about Brett Bielema here. We're talking about the Hogs. And they had some pretty good offensive linemen last year with Ragnow and Dan Skipper. But why wasn't that offensive line better? And can it be better? Because if that's not the case, then I don't know if Austin Allen can finish the season.
Well, it goes back to the voting again. Dan Skipper was first-team All-SEC preseason last year. And I think people, another misconception with offensive linemen and offensive line play is size. People just get enamored with size, and they think, oh, Dan Skipper's 6'10", he's a great tackle. And it just wasn't the case. He didn't play great football last year.
Nothing against him.
Nothing against him personally. He wasn't a great SEC offensive tackle. I think with Arkansas right now, there is a bit of an identity crisis on offense. Because you had Bielema ball when he arrived, when he brought from Wisconsin. We're going to put the ball down. We're going to run through you. We're going to run over you. Whatever it takes, we're going to run the ball. We're going to do it with guys that are bigger, stronger than you. We're going to maul you. Well, Dan Enos comes in. That's not his game.
Right.
Now you see quick throws to the perimeter. They run the ball through the air a little bit. You see some RPOs. The run game is not as extensive as it was when Coach Chaney was there calling the plays. So it's all changed. And I just wonder if sort of maybe the bodies don't fit the style of offense just yet. So until they figure out who they want to be consistently, I don't necessarily think they can be dominant in any facet. Now, I agree with you that it was not all on Austin on that offensive line last year. There are times when in slide protection, a quarterback needs to know, get the ball out. There's a time in a three-step drop, you got to get the ball out because you just don't have five can't block seven.
Right.
So you got to know, get rid of the football. But there were a lot of breakdowns. There are a lot of missed stunts, missed games. Easy, simple tasks that offensive line should have been able to handle last year that they did not. So if that group doesn't improve, I'll be surprised if Austin Allen survives this season. He cannot. You look at the Texas A&M game, the Alabama game, the LSU game. He cannot take hits like that on a regular basis again this year.
Like you said, there's a lot of people who don't understand the metrics of how the O-line works. You see a 6'10 Dan Skipper at left tackle, and you see a 6'2 Carl Lawson at right end. You assume that's a mismatch for Arkansas. It might actually be a mismatch for Auburn from a speed perspective, from a leverage perspective. A guy like Skipper could be at a disadvantage
Absolutely.
In a situation like that.
No, there's no doubt about it. And I think also when you get to tackle, I mean, I can remember before the first game last year, I guess USC had a walkthrough on a Friday. And multiple national members of the media are tweeting out photographs of Zach Banner and how big he is. And look how big. Zach Banner is massive. Zach Banner, look how wide. His head is gigantic. Look at his shoulders. Look at his wingspan. None of that blocks anybody.
Right.
And you can be 6'10", 395 pounds at tackle, but if you can't move, the dudes you're playing against in this league are going to get by you, around you, or through you. If you have to overextend on how quick you get back in your pass set, that's when they're going to turn and put their face mask in your chest and run right over you. So it can absolutely be a disadvantage from that perspective.
Let's move over to the East. When I think offensive line, I think Georgia. This is a team that they're going to be the pick to win the East. They seem to have everything defensively. They got a young quarterback everybody loves, two big names in the backfield. But it was a bad O-line last year. Has to be better than it was a year ago. Can it be? Will it be? Is that the same problems that you're seeing for this offense?
Yeah, it can be. First, there's two big benefits that this offensive line has that not a lot of other teams do. They have two really good tight ends in Blazevich and Isaac Nauta. Mm-hmm. Those guys can benefit in pass protection. Those guys can benefit in extending your front, widening your front. So if you go a two tight end set, your defensive ends are outside linebackers. All of a sudden, they're more wide. And that gives you more advantages of running the ball between the tackles. So a lot of people think two tight end sets jams everything in, but technically it spreads things out. So all of a sudden now we got a better option to run the ball in the A and B gaps in between the center and the guard and tackle. I think also you have two good running backs and two different style running backs as well. Sony Michel's better between the tackles than people give him credit for, but they can be two different style backs, and I think that's a huge advantage. They were maybe a little too complicated in the run game year one under Jim Chaney, but I love the fact that what Chaney does is completely revamps his run game on almost a weekly basis. But you got to know it to be able to do it. And I just don't think they were all on the same page. They ran into a lot of 8, 9, and even sometimes 10-man fronts and just didn't have the bodies to be able to run the ball into the looks that they were getting. And that goes on Jacob Eason to be able to force those defenses out of those looks. Georgia has a lot. I think Isaiah Wynn, who's going to go back to tackle, he played some tackle. I watched a bowl game against Penn State a few years ago. He can be a really good tackle in this league. He was a guard most of the time last year. They're still shuffling the pieces along the offensive line. They're kind of one of those groups, like we talked about before, that has talent, but I need to see who the first five is going to be and can they stay together? Can they morph and gel and begin to play as a unit? Because they're not going to the SEC championship game unless they get five in there that play together and have a true understanding of what they want to accomplish.
You said a complicated running call. Give me an example of what a complicated running play would be versus just running ISO or just running power.
Well, I think the first thing that you have, let's take zone for example. If we're running inside or outside zone, you're basically blocking space. Mm-hmm. So inside zone to the right is going to be a smaller step, but we're just zone stepping to the right and we're going to work up to the second level if there's not a defender on us. Now, double team principles come into play there and that changes a lot of different things, but you start running gaps, counters, truck plays, different types of zone read plays where you're blocking back and pulling pin pull schemes, then you get three-man front. So am I blocking down on a zero nose or am I blocking back down to the three technique? Am I going to rely on my tackle coming down and getting to the second level and climbing? Or am I going to have to worry about managing that guy by myself? And so I think when you get some of these defensive fronts that move around a lot and you get different angles on double teams, that's when it becomes a little bit more complicated. And the complicated part is not so much in each individual play. It's going from a gap scheme 1 week to a zone scheme the next week, to a zone read scheme the next week, and maybe back to a trap wham scheme the next week. So, and Chaney does that great. And he did it at Arkansas a few years ago, and I wouldn't have wanted to play against it because I talked to coaches in the league that said it was an absolute preparation nightmare because you just didn't know what you were going to get week in and week out. So it's not so much the individual plays. It's just more on getting comfortable with what you're going to do that particular week.
All right, let's spin it back to why we're here in Hoover this week. We got to pick the East. We got to pick the West. We have to pick the champion. Tell me who you like for the West. Tell me who you like for the East. And who's going to Atlanta in December?
I've got Alabama playing Florida again, and Alabama will beat Florida again. I do think Alabama has holes, has problems, some of which we've talked about. I think the defensive front will not be near what it was last year. I think some of the non-offensive touchdowns really benefited that secondary. Some of the pressure really benefited that secondary. Minka Fitzpatrick's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sold that the rest of those DBs are as elite as some people believe that they are. And I think what happens up front makes or breaks a secondary, honestly, in my opinion. Offensively, a new scheme, a different scheme. We could be looking at a true sophomore left tackle, a true sophomore quarterback, and a true freshman right tackle. There's not a lot of teams that can handle being in that situation and still win a lot of football games.
Right.
It's too young, it's too inexperienced. But can they have another receiver step up opposite Calvin Ridley? There's some guys who a lot of people like, they think that they can. I think Alabama drops a game or two. I've got them losing to Florida State and Mississippi State, but I think they win the West, and I think they beat Florida in the SEC championship game again.
So I think the pick for most everybody in the East is going to be Georgia. So Is this more of a belief in Florida for you or not enough belief in Georgia?
The most talented offensive line in the league, the second best head coach in the league, arguably the most talented group of receivers in the league. I mean, you could throw Ole Miss, LSU, maybe Texas A&M in there, but Florida's up there no matter what. Really good group of tight ends. They took big hits along the front seven on defense. I'm aware of that, and I know that. I love Taven Bryan up front. I love CC Jefferson up front. Zuniga's a guy who can really get after it off the edge. I think they have enough, and the young linebackers had to play late because of injuries to Davis and Anzalone. I like Randy Shannon taking over, even though I'm a big Jeff Collins fan. I don't think that's a big step down. I just think Florida knows what it takes to get there. They've done it, and they have less youth in critical positions than Georgia does. And at least Mac has options at quarterback. That's been the big problem, is not necessarily not having a great quarterback, but when he's lost one, who does he have to turn it over to? And I think now at least he has a couple different guys that maybe could step in and be good enough.
Cole, this was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot for your time.
Anytime. Thank
you.
Enjoy
the week. Thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. If you liked what you heard, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe. You can also give us a rating. And for all SEC all the time, visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.